there's a...
All opinions expressed here are the views of the speaker, not necessarily those of their hosts, producers, or owners.
Dead air.
There it goes. Hello, I'm Stuart Alexander. Once again, I'd like to welcome my listeners to Socialist Can, 1 hour left. This is a 1 hour weekly roundtable discussion where we as a panel discuss social issues from a left perspective. We weren't on last week. I say weekly, but we did miss last week. We took a break off with the rest of the nation just to spend some time with our families and friends. But this week, the panel will be discussing seniors, retirement, Social Security, Medicare, and the assault on aging America. And on our panel, we have weekly Deborah Mackey, we have Matt Orne, Alan Mackey, and myself coming to you this week. I'd like to thank all of you for joining the program. Once again, every week you bring all of your expertise and information to the public, our listeners, and greatly appreciate it. Deborah, I always like to start out by just very briefly discussing what was on your program this week, Left of Liberal. You come on every week. If you can say what the program was about and what times you come on, I greatly appreciate it.
Yeah, we come on every Monday at 7 p.m. Central. We have a Facebook page, Left of Liberal, with host Alan and Debbie Mackey, where there are several Left of Liberal pages, so look for ours that has a white peace poppy. You can contact us at 512-517-2708, and we have an email at leftofliberal@outlook.com. Last week, we have been going to the LBJ Library to do some research, and we pretty much accidentally ran on to some information about a Senator Pepper in 1945, something that he wrote. We read that on air, and also something that Michael Parenti wrote, that how the everything is hidden from us. But we dug into these files and we found some really interesting things that we're going to read some of them as we go along here and there on our program. It's really good.
And we greatly appreciate the contribution that you're making with that program weekly. Also, we have an event coming up in another a month from today, and the program will be our program and meeting will be in Austin, Texas. Socialist Can, Making a Difference. Deborah, could you just give us a little bit of information, share with our listeners about the program coming up? A meeting in August in Austin?
Yeah, it'll be at the Live Oak Universal Unitarian Church. It's all this is explained in an event that I put on the Socialist Can page, and it's the first thing that you come to. It's August 10th from 8 a.m. to 6 p.m. At the church. It gives the directions and information there about the church, and also some hotel rooms if you need a hotel room in the area. But let us know if you're coming by responding to that event, and that gives us an idea of what to expect as far as how many people are coming.
Well, I appreciate that update on that, on those two events and also programming that we have that you have on a regular basis. As I mentioned, our program today, we are on the 10th of July. Our panel, we were discussing seniors, retirement, Social Security, Medicare, and the assault on aging America. And I would just have to say, if you're in your 40s and you're looking forward to retirement, you know, the future looks pretty bleak. They already are saying that the funds for Social Security is going to be depleted within the next 20 years. If you look at what is taking place with many seniors across the country, you know, sometimes they're in their 60s, 70s, and even 80s. And if they're not working, they are looking for work. But, we with Socialists Can, we realize that it's a growing problem, not with just the baby boomers, but, you know, the millennials. But this is something that we as a nation are looking at, a dilemma that is facing the entire nation. Now, Alan, we have certain demands that we have already placed as far as what we believe should be something immediate demands that should be implemented. And Alan, could you just go over those demands that we have with Socialists Can?
Well, the first thing is that we're demanding an immediate $500 a month across the board increase for everybody. And the miserly Social Security payments people are receiving right now, you know, they don't amount to anything. And Social Security should be a real living income, just like, you know, wages should provide people with a real living income, just like unemployment compensation should provide people with a real living income. And that we've gone so long since 1936 or so, when Social Security first came into effect, and it hasn't been made into a real living income is a real dirty shame. Here we are living in the wealthiest country in the world, and people get these miserly Social Security checks, and the government itself doesn't kick in anything for Social Security, and in a lot of countries
now,
they do.
Now, Alan, one of the other things we have with our demands, we have cancellation of all student debts. How is that affecting seniors? Because many of them are stuck with student debt still.
Well, I was just reading an article in the ARP newspaper, and it said that there are millions of people over 50 that still owe on their student debts. And there was also an article in the Wall Street Journal that said millions of people and seniors are going into default on their student debts. We have $1.5 trillion of student debt in this country altogether, and about 60 billion of that is for seniors. People over 60 have that debt. And, you know, how does somebody on a Social Security check pay on that kind of debt? And on top of that, we have collection agencies that are going after people's Social Security checks and their wages. Many senior citizens have to work part-time jobs, and they're working at poverty wage jobs in these part-time jobs, and they're working to pay for their medicines and the little bit that they need to get by, and they're having their wages garnished and their Social Security checks garnished. And all these Democrats that are talking about how they want to eliminate student debt and everything, they haven't even not a whisper about the need to stop these collection agencies. In fact, Congress has approved these collection agencies going after people in this manner. And it's very vicious. You know, when you're trying to make ends meet and you have these collection agencies coming after people, garnishing their wages and their Social Security checks, it puts a lot of pressure on people. I think it's probably killing some people.
I'm going to have Matt and also Deborah to elaborate on this. As we mentioned, those are our demands, $500 monthly increase on all Social Security recipients, cancellation of all student debt, right now approaching $1.5 trillion, increase the federal minimum wage to $16 an hour. But Matt, we have included as part of our demands with Socialists Can that they all seniors, people that are receiving Social Security, that it should be increased by $500. Why are we saying that this is necessary now? Matt, then I would like for Deborah to respond.
Well, basically what it is going from the system of perpetual impoverishment, in which what you get out depends on what you paid in, to a universalization, if you would, of supplemental security income, okay, which is supposed to ensure that you don't fall below the poverty line, which is, it does nothing of the sort, but it does supplement when, as in my case and millions of others, you were so poor that what you paid in was next to nothing. And so what you get back is next to nothing. Okay. So it provides income floor that's like woefully inadequate. So the people I work with, while you're making these demands on the U.S. government, we're making the same demand on the California government, okay, that it protect its people. And we'll see who gets there first. As far as
but let me ask you, Matt. Shouldn't we be looking at, because you know we're all of us are part of the working class, whether we're in California or whether we're in the U.S. or whether we're living in Brazil. Shouldn't we be concerned about the standard of living for the working class everywhere?
Yes.
Absolutely. I mean, first of all, as socialists, we don't even believe in borders.
No, we do not. No, we do not. And
yeah, so, I mean, shouldn't we be concerned with whether they live in Rhode Island or whether they're living in Philadelphia or whether they're living in, Alabama? Shouldn't we be concerned with poverty everywhere and having people having a standard of living everywhere?
Yes, absolutely. Out here, so many of us are citizens of the Mexican Republic that what that government does impacts us directly. Okay. Whether or not they have a functioning social security system that has a big long acronym with a bunch of S's than in the U.S. version, but they do have one. And it doesn't even function at the level of the U.S. system. Of course, they have a smaller economy than California, let alone the U.S., to deal with, but a lot more people than we have. So, absolutely.
One of the things I like to just mention, Matt, if you look at the migration that we had from China, if you go back 25 years ago, we had a huge migration of people coming from China, coming here to the U.S. to work. And now that number, people that are coming from Asia, coming here to work, it has changed because now they are in competition with the U.S. for trade, because incomes, even though they're not where they should be, they have increased. So the thing is, when you're looking at if, you know, the wages are increased for workers everywhere, there's less of an interest to be wanting to move across borders when you need to be taken care of in the country that you're in. But here, the U.S. Uh-huh. come in with sanctions and they're depressing other economies. That's the reason why we have people trying to get across the U.S.-Mexico border, because we have created that problem.
Yeah, it's worse because you have a first tier of offshore economies like the Chinese economy, the Mexican economy, the economy of India, okay, that are a first tier of offshore economies, and then the workers there, you know, win victories. Yeah, the Chinese, the Mexican, the Indian workers have been struggling and winning for over a decade, okay? So they're still winning their struggle. And what happens is that you have the second wave of offshoring. You have Chinese factories moving to Vietnam. You have factories in India moving to Bangladesh. You have Mexican maquilas all of a sudden popping up across the border in Guatemala, Salvador, Haiti, okay, which has one of the world's lowest incomes and standards of living. So the same thing that was done to U.S. workers is now being done to their workers. Okay, that's another one of the laws of capitalist development that cannot be repealed. is the law of the race to the bottom. Okay. I mean, yes, various governments can and do try to slow that down or even cease that movement, you know, using their laws. But the laws are in place as an international phenomenon. Okay. The Chinese do have a tool that the Mexican and Indian government have yet to develop, and that is that they can just, boom, nationalize factories. So they can't be seized. Okay. But then when they do that, then Hong Kong erupts. Why? Well, a lot of reasons. One of the things is that Hong Kong is a sort of portal to the world capitalist system that the rest of China is not. It's a place over which the control of the Chinese government is deliberately limited. And they have a long history of standing up for that autonomy, even as far as language goes. You know, in the rest of China, they don't teach anything but Mandarin. But Hong Kong is Cantonese, and they intend to keep that. It's sort of a hole in the Chinese wall, if you will, a big hole.
Well, one of the things I like to
persuade the Chinese government not to do things that would throw it more out of step with international capitalism.
Well, Deborah, I would like to ask you, because we with Socialist Can, we're saying this is one of our demands, that we are calling for a $500 increase for all Social Security recipients. You know, but the thing is, we're saying $500 because we need to eventually raise the level of income where we raise it out of poverty. I spoke to a lady just the other day. Her Social Security benefits was $935 a month. $935 a month. If you look at the federal poverty level in this country, is $12,140. She's living in poverty, drawing a Social Security check. Deborah, why do you say that it's imperative, it's necessary to start increasing? We're saying 500. I'm saying it should be more, that we should be saying that this is necessary now. Deborah?
Well, they're saying that, you know, this is supplemental, that we shouldn't depend on it, that we should depend on other things like pensions and savings, but people are losing their pensions.
Yeah, we know about that.
For various reasons. Yeah, I know about that. And,
yeah.
You know, immigrants, non-documented immigrants, you know, they come in and they pay taxes, but, you know, they're being held out. So they're not allowed to come in anymore. They don't benefit from you know, the taxes that they pay necessarily. But and then the increases in premiums, and for our Part B and our supplemental insurance, the increases in co-pays and the increases in deductibles, there's no way that, you know, anybody could pay all that and still have money to live on.
I would like to just the panel to respond to this. You know, the average Social Security recipient nationwide receive less than $1,500 a month. It's like it's like $1,480 or something like that per month. That's average. And is it possible to live on $1,500 a month, or are we just still talking about living in poverty, Alan?
Well, it's not possible for a person to live on $1,500 a month. And, you know, it makes me sick to see hear these upper middle class people talk about how Social Security was never meant to be a sole source of income. This is just an outright lie. Francis Perkins, who introduced Social Security as part of the New Deal as Franklin Roosevelt's Secretary of Labor, she said that this was the best we could do at the time, and that's what Roosevelt told her, that he couldn't twist any more arms to get Social Security to be a real living income. And she said that, you know, people would have to continue to struggle on to make it a real living income. So, you know, the socialists and communists fought for Social Security to be a real living income way before the New Deal. So, and Frances Perkins says that it wasn't even her idea. She even referred to Karl Marx as coming up with the idea for Social Security. And, you know, this whole concept about that when people are retired that they should have to live on a lower income is just totally absurd, because nobody should have to live for less than what the cost of living is. And that's what they're telling people. I have before me right now a piece of legislation that the Democrats have introduced in Congress. Over 200 members have supported it. It's called H.R. 860. And, you know, it's a fairly decent piece of legislation, but it's lacking in how much people's Social Security checks should be increased every month. And there's no provision to make sure employers are monitored, because millions of people are losing out on Social Security because employers have deducted Social Security from their paychecks but not paid into the Social Security system. And many of these are small business people, and they die, and there's no way for people to collect, and there's no records, you know. And nobody's right. talking about any of this. And, you know, Debbie mentioned the pension problem. Well, these people talk about it's meant to supplement pensions, but these same people who make these kinds of unconscionable remarks, they don't lift a finger, nor do they utter one single word when we have millions of working people in this country who have been cheated out of their pensions and robbed of their buyouts and everything else that they've taken from the corporations. And I mean, people are being robbed. On the Iron Range in Minnesota, tens of thousands of workers on the Iron Range in the mining industry have been robbed of their pensions by huge corporations like United States Steel and other mining companies that filed bankruptcy to get out from paying these pensions. In Wisconsin, there was a huge struggle when Wisconsin Steel supposedly went bankrupt, even though the people that had investments in that ended up with millions and millions of dollars. The workers ended up with nothing, and they had to struggle for years to get just a miserly pension from Wisconsin Steel. You know, and this goes on all across the country. It's gone on in the auto industry. It's gone on in the chemical industry. It's gone on in the energy industry. These corporations have figured out how to use all these means and loopholes to get out of paying the pensions. And, you know, they file every single thing in court to make it almost impossible for workers to protect their pensions. So, you know, Social Security has to become a real living income. It's time to do that. And that should be included in this legislation. I know I talked to a legislative assistant from Representative Larson's office who's introduced this piece of legislation. And by the way, they introduced it after our organization started calling for this increase in Social Security, and it started spreading all over Facebook. But, you know, the Democrats, they've introduced this piece of legislation, but they've done it as an election gimmick. They have no intent of trying to push it through Congress. There's some 200 Democrats that have sponsored the legislation. I've called many of their offices. None of them, their legislative assistants can even tell you anything about the legislation. You know, so it's a big farce.
Right.
And it's because the working people in this country have taken this crap for so long. We should be out in the streets. They tell people all over the world to get out in the streets with pots and pans and bang on them when it comes to a socialist government not providing something that they claim the people should be provided with. Well, where are the American working people out in the streets banging on pots and pans demanding a real living income out of Social Security? This is what we got to do. We got to get out in the streets and struggle. That's why we have Social Security today, because millions of working people got out in the streets and they fought for Social Security. The CIO unions, the Auto Workers Union, the United Mine Workers Union, all these big unions, in the industrial unions, they got behind Social Security and forced Congress to enact Social Security as part of the New Deal. Otherwise, Franklin Roosevelt would have dropped Social Security the same way he dropped the call for a national public health care system. And, you know, when we talk about Social Security, health care is an important part of the whole Social Security, because it's Social Security that's robbing seniors of their entire incomes. You know, I've been in places where working people that are 70 and 80 years old go back to work at these jobs getting paid minimum wages, and you ask them, why are you working? And they'll tell you they're working to pay for their medications that Medicare and their supplemental insurance won't pay for. Yeah.
Matt, I want to ask you, when we talk about, you know, a living wage to avoid living in poverty, you know, Matt, what, when we talk about Social Security and we're saying it should be based on cost of living, what should that be? I mean, can we put a dollar amount on that?
Well, depends on where you're at.
Well, you're in the United States. Okay. So now we know where we're at. Because when we look at minimum wage, the federal government says $7.25, no matter where you live next to the Pacific or whether you live next to the Atlantic. But
right.
In the U.S., exactly. What should that be?
They set the minimum wage so low that you can't even live in the poorest states. Out here, it's a joke. Okay, $15 an hour is a joke. There's no place out here that you could live on $15 an hour. And the SSI doesn't get you much further than that. Okay, so out here, we literally can't afford to wait for the Fed. Okay, we'll push, but we'll push here as well for this government here to do what the feds are not, be it in the area of Social Security, be it in the area of single-payer health care and all that sort of thing. We'll push here. Now, it's interesting that it was mentioned about you know, the history of the movement towards these security programs, Social Security, health security, and so on. Those were demands right out of the Communist Manifesto. Okay, and where they, you know, list their concrete demands. And what's interesting about that historically is the first place the working class really began to gain on this was Germany. Okay, Marx's home country. Why?
What was that?
Because the Prussian government, Germany, was the place where they one of the first countries in the world to enact Social Security and a national health care insurance policy. Why? Because they were afraid of revolution. They were up and afraid of a revolution. You know, as the Prussian monarchy was cementing its control over Germany, in that self-same process, they realized that they were in trouble. Because if they didn't at least get, you know, neutralize the German working class as it was becoming a German working class, and not, say, a Prussian or a Bavarian, whatever, you know, as they were, you know, cementing Germany together, they realized that there was a tremendous potential just in unifying the German working class, let alone if they fought beside the French, British, Russian, et cetera. Which Russia was kind of backwards then. But, they saw the danger. And so they enacted, through the Reichstag, they enacted the healthcare system and the Social Security system, one of the first and at the time the finest in the world, which it wasn't saying much. But, it was a pioneering effort. And it would not have happened if it had not been for the revolutionary militancy of the German working class. Same thing in the U.S. Okay. The Social Security would not have been enacted had it not been for a long struggle, first with the IWW, and, you know, even before it, the Knights of Labor, right? And then the IWW, and when those passed, the CIO, et cetera. And what FDR managed to do was to co-opt them. Okay. the same way that the Prussian government co-opted the German Social Democrats. It's like, forget about revolution, we'll give you this. Okay, and they gave them that. So, you know, Richard Wilson's
Matt, let me just ask you, are we just having a problem with global capitalism, no matter where capitalism exists?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. The whole wages system is based on what? It's based on somebody pays me something so they can have power over my work for a certain period of time. That is the political nature of capitalism. Okay, that the overwhelming majority has to sell power for paycheck. We have to. Just right at its, you know, at its hub, okay, it's the sale of power, and then the workers try to recuperate that power in the public sphere. That is why privatization is so vital to capitalism. Okay, to shrink down the public sector, the public sphere, to where the areas of influence by the working class become less and less and less. Okay, out here, trash used to be collected by municipal agencies. Now it's collected by a private company, Burtek. Guess what that means? That means that within that sphere, it's now private sector. That's what they wanted to do and did do with healthcare. Okay, when they went to try to enact something which isn't universal coverage, but is coverage for everyone. Well, for millions more than there had been, the ACA is privatized. It was under private auspice. You have public funds paid out to private contractors. Okay. That is why they would not give in on single payer, and they still will not give in on single payer. Okay. The neoliberal market totalitarian seized control of the Democratic Party from the Social Democrats in 1992. They're not about to give up that power. They'd rather have the other party win repeatedly with all that disaster,
right,
than to give that power up. So, you know, that's sort of the political dynamic, you know, getting at the root. They have an iron grip to where they continue with privatization. Okay.
Well, I'm gonna take a short pause here. We're halfway through our program. Just want to let our listeners know they are tuned into Socialist Can, 1 hour left. We come on every week. Our discussion this week with our panel is seniors, retirement, Social Security, Medicare, and the assault on aging. Assault on aging in America. And we'd like to thank our panelists for joining us today. We have Matt Oren, Deborah Mackey, and also Alan Mackey. And Deborah, I would just like for you to just mention about your program, our program, Left of Liberal, what you have coming up, and when our listeners can be able to tune into that.
Yeah, it's on Mondays at 7 p.m. Central. It's called Left of Liberal with host Alan and Debbie Mackey. We have a Facebook page. There are other Left of Liberal pages, so look for ours with the look for the white peace poppy. You can contact us at 512-517-2708. We have an email at leftofliberal@outlook.com. And next week, you're supposed to be on with us on Monday to talk about. Yeah,
<It's up. laughs>
we have that on the calendar. So just to remind you.
I'll be looking forward to that.
Okay, good. We'll be glad to have you.
Yeah, it's always enjoyable being on the program. I was just asking. Deborah, the question went to Matt in regards to what should a living wage, what it should be. Very interesting. This was approximately 3 years ago, and the question was posed posed to Elizabeth Warren about a living wage, not a living wage, what a minimum wage should be in this country. At the time, it was $7.25 an hour. But when you looked at her calculations and what a minimum wage should be in the country, she came up with, like, it was, I believe it was like $22.40 for minimum wage. So, you know, Deborah, you know, that's a huge difference from what we have right now. Is more, is almost three times as much as what the minimum wage is today. So, you know, you look at the federal poverty wage in this country, poverty wages in this country, which is $12,060 annually. And some economists have called for increasing Social Security payments up to $24,000 annually. Is $24,000, Deborah, within the realm of reality when we're talking about getting closer to a living wage, Deborah?
No, no, I don't know anybody that could live off of $24,000 a year.
I can't.
No, not with the cost of living. It has to meet the cost of living. And these people don't understand that, you know, we go to the store and we spend our money too, you know, the people who are on Social Security. If we don't make enough, we're not going to go to the store and spend that money. And they need to remember that if we can't buy their products, then that eventually will hurt them.
Right. And I look at just the cost of, you know, where I live and picking up my trash, I'm already out of $19,000 a year. $19,000, I mean, you know, $1,500 a month, you know, $1,500 a month plus picking up my trash, I'm out of $19,000. That doesn't give me too much money left for food, clothing, transportation, and paying other expenses I have. So, you know,
and plus the medical bills. Yeah, the medical bills and the premiums.
Yeah. No money for medical.
The cost of our medications. People are saying that they used to make like $20 or whatever for their medication that they got monthly, and now it's gone up to hundreds of dollars. Yeah, because the insurance companies are not covering it anymore.
Yeah, so aging in America. I mean, not to mention, just for my medical every year, I'm paying like $3,000 a year, well, $230 a month. So that comes out to be around $2,500 a year just for medical. So, Alan, I mean, is it $24,000? Deborah says no. What do you say? I'm saying no also. I can't live on $24,000 a year. And I don't think any senior in this country can. What's your opinion?
Well, I believe that everybody on Social Security should get the minimum of what is now the maximum monthly Social Security payment, and that's $2,700 a month, and that would still be on the low side. Now, I've suggested for years, every time I talk to groups of working people and they ask me what the minimum wage should be or what Social Security should be, I tell them you should do the figuring yourself. Sit down with your family and take a piece of paper and write down how much you pay for rent, how much you or mortgage, how much you pay for health care expenses, how much you pay for food, how much you pay for lights and heating, how much your transportation, your car or bus cost you. Write down all these things, including, you know, what some a little bit of recreational activity cost and what education is costing you. Write that all down, and then you get a real idea of what minimum income in this country should be, what the minimum wage should be based on, and what the Social Security should be based on. None of these politicians want to talk about cost of living, and none of them want to talk about standard of living. These are terms that we have to insert back into the mainstream of political dialogue and discussion in this country. And unless we do that, things aren't going to change. You know, when we talk, I met with leaders of this group called the Interfaith Workers Justice Committee, and I also met with a group of leaders of Jobs with Justice. And I tried to explain to them, they've been talking about wage theft for years, that they're organizing all these struggles against wage theft. And what they mean by wage theft is that, you know, if you work at Walmart and before you get on the clock, the boss hands you a broom and says sweep over in this corner, sweep over in that corner, and they cheat you out of 10 or 15 minutes. This is what they have in mind of wage theft. But the real, and it's wrong that the employers do this and they should be taken to task for that. But when you consider the theft of pensions, this is wage theft because workers agree to pensions instead of taking their wages up front. And when workers get cheated out of their pensions and when they get cheated out of their buyouts by these crooked and corrupt investment companies and the bankers, you know, this is wage theft on a monumental scale in this country that's taking place. And it's a huge transfer of wealth from the hands of working people into the pockets of the very super rich. You know, there was a Glass-Steagall Act under Roosevelt that was supposed to prevent all this corruption of when it comes to pensions and everything. And the way that it was supposed to prevent it was by the banks not having any right to be involved in stock transactions and in the pension funds and everything else. Well, Bill Clinton did away with all that. And now you have bankers buying up stock when it's cheap and selling it to people and to pension funds for big profits when the price goes up just before the stock drops. And, you know, this is going on all over this country. This is another source of massive, massive wage theft that's taking place. And the unions won't address this problem. Organizations like Jobs with Justice and the Interfaith Workers Justice Committee, they will not adjust it, you know, address this issue. And somebody at some point has to address this issue. The Democrats will not address it. And, you know, how can we allow this kind of theft to go on?
We keep talking about Democrats and Republicans. It sounds like the Democrats and the Republicans aren't working for working people. It sounds like we need to have a third party, one that's a workers' party.
Definitely. We need to organize a new political party, and that party should be an anti-monopoly, anti-imperialist party, and workers' rights and the livelihoods of workers should be the main focus of that party. Wall Street and the employers, they have two parties. We as working people don't have any party at this point, and we're not going to have any rights. We're not going to receive any kind of adjustments to our miserly incomes unless we have a party that fights for our rights in Congress, then that fights along with the struggles of the unions to improve our living standards. And, you know, the unions haven't done a very good job of improving our living standards either. They've been so the millionaire labor leaders have been so tied to the Democratic Party, it's pitiful. And at a time when Wall Street profits are at an all-time high and there's this profit orgy is taking place, you have unions that are still accepting, you know, wage cutbacks. This is total insanity. And then if the stock market drops, they'll say, oh, we can't fight for a better contract now because look at what's happening to the corporations. They're losing money. You know, well, why aren't they struggling now when the corporations admit that they're making all kinds of money? Anybody can look at the stock market and see that there's a huge profit orgy taking place. You have corporations buying back their own stock instead of investing it to create jobs like Trump said would happen. And, you know, this is all wage theft.
Matt, you know, one of the things that Alan was just talking about is about the two corporate parties, the Democrats and the Republicans. And when we look at what we have with the, you know, the way we have just the theft from the working class is it's at a level that we haven't seen within our lifetimes. But we're saying that we need more. But when it comes to Social Security for seniors, which we believe it should be based on a cost of living, we're saying part of our demands is that the monthly increase should be $500 for everyone receiving Social Security. And that's what we're saying with Socialist Connection Action Network. But the question is going to always come up, Matt, Where's the money going to come from?
Well, where is the money going to now? As far as the federal budget goes, U.S. federal budget, going into the military, going into propping up repressive regime, going into bailout. As far as you know, wage theft and form of broken pensions, it's kind of good to remember that Donald Trump is bankrupted 5 times. Do you think that the people that worked at those Trump businesses are seeing a diamond pension? I don't think so. Okay. That's one of the protections from creditors that companies get and debtors get in bankruptcy. But they won't let us bankrupt on our student loans. Oh, no. So,
yeah, because we're talking about over a decade, we're talking about trillions of dollars. Of course, on the other hand, we're talking about trillions of dollars for defense spending. We're talking about trillions of dollars for corporate bailouts. We're talking about trillions of dollars to help to subsidize Wall Street. So, I mean, are we saying that we need to do a total transformation of our whole system?
Well, we need to smash the system and construct the new one, the working class. So we look at the work of the third parties, and we see a couple of things. Since 1968, there has been a third party in California that is avowedly socialist, Casey Freedom, but we can't get anybody elected dog catcher. We're the smallest of the third parties. The Greens have come around, the big wave of socialism, big wave. And they do have reach, international reach, including in the U.S., but they're having a tough time with it, too. Some of the earliest elections that they won was the mayoralty of Richmond, California, the refinery town. And their candidate, Dionne McLaughlin, when she resigned her, finished her term as mayor, she ran for and won a city council seat, and another Green took the mayoralty seat. So you do have some small victories. Now she's eyeing a higher office, but as an independent. Okay. I'm not sure why that is, but no, she's not running as a Green this time. You do have exit third parties. But again, the Green Party has been at it since the U.S. branch of the International Green Movement was founded. Okay, and that's been decades. And Decent Freedom's been at it since 1968. So do we have any reason to believe that a third party will get any further in electoral politics than they have since 1968? On the other hand, other things are changing. Okay.
Parties, they got to get serious. They have to get serious and nominate people to represent their parties other than Roseanne Barr.
Yes, that was a huge fiasco. That was a huge fiasco. Which are about?
Yeah, you don't get a maniac to represent your party. And now she's pushing for Donald Trump.
She's pushing for Donald Trump, and she's pushing for Bibi Netanyahu. Okay.
Yeah, so I mean, that's a big scar, for a socialist party to be nominating someone like that to be your presidential nominee. We got to get serious here.
Yeah. And a lot of the leaders of the Peace and Freedom did learn from that mistake, but they're quite not quite sure what to do for an encore. Okay? Like I said, they've been at it since 1968. And you go down to their conventions and everything, a lot of the same people that have been at it since 1968. Cindy Sheehan brings a breath of fresh air. she tried to get Peace and Freedom into our independence movement because she was saying, look, we haven't been able to grow outside of California. Let's join this movement. Because, quite frankly,
what I saw with Cindy Sheehan, Cindy Sheehan was just trying to get herself separated from the Peace and Freedom Party after she saw, you know, the moves that they were making.
Yes, yes. And she fought and lost to get them into our independence movement because the California National Party, CNP, is in no way socialist. Okay. The ones that are trying to start a new third party out here are in no way socialist. So she was trying to, bring in a left wing, and that didn't go either.
I think we get back to what Alan was saying, is that we need to have a strong focus on trying to organize a third political party, because the third political parties we have out there right now, let's face it, they're not working. But I have eight more minutes here, so I'm going to throw each one of your question. Unfortunately, I won't be able to go around the table. So when I throw you the question, it'd be your question. I'm going to start with Alan. Medicare has been under attack by the Democrats and Republicans for more than three decades. Could you explain to our listeners why these two corporate parties are attempting to rob American seniors of this benefit of Medicare?
Well, because there's a lot of money in health care, and both parties represent the people that are involved in making money off of health care. You know, we need not Medicare for All. Medicare for All has been used as an election gimmick by the Democrats since 1948, since Truman started talking about it and never intended to deliver. And, you know, the little bit of Medicare that we have that Johnson did deliver on, he expected that to be expanded to cover everybody. And the Democrats have done nothing but join Republicans and cut back. In fact, Barack Obama even appointed Alan Simpson to co-chair what was called the Cat Food Commission, which was supposed to be looking at reforming Social Security. Their definition of reform meant cutting it back. Joe Biden has been a big defender of cutting back Social Security. He wants to attach means testing and everything else to Social Security.
Over three decades.
Yeah, over three decades. And this is the guy that the corporate Democrats want to put up against Trump. You know, and this has been going on and on. What we need is a national public health care system based on the model of public education, public funding, public administration, and public delivery. Put the doctors on the public payroll, just like teachers and garbage collectors and other people that are involved in the public sector. You know, this is what we need. This is the kind of healthcare system that's going to solve our problem and get us out of
the mess. Has the national healthcare program been successful in any country that you know of?
Well, it's, Britain has a form of it. Cuba definitely has a very good national public healthcare system. The United Nations World Health Organization has held up Cuba as an example of healthcare. So, you know, it's worked good there. And it will work any place. There's no reason why it shouldn't work for healthcare the same way that it's worked for education. It's just that, you know, you have to have politicians that are dedicated to making it work and to getting it properly funded. You know, instead of 850 military bases all over the world, think about this. That's what we need in this country. 850 community public healthcare centers providing the people with free healthcare. We could have that. And it'd be a lot cheaper than having military bases scattered all over the world, 850 military bases. You know, the priorities of this country have to be changed. And we're not going to change the priorities of this country unless we have a new political party that puts peace at the top of its agenda. And this is, you know, when we talk about peace, we're talking about a huge peace dividend, which would go to fund Social Security. It would go to fund health care programs. It would go to fund public education up through college and preschool and everything else. There's a lot that we could do with this kind of money that's being squandered on militarism and wars. Why kill
people? And I want to mention under the Democrats, Barack Obama, he stood behind a piece of legislation to increase U.S. military nuclear proliferation to the tune of $1 trillion. And we're talking about Iranians trying to develop various nuclear capabilities for peaceful purposes. I'm totally against it, whether it's for peaceful purposes or non-peaceful purposes, because it only pollutes the planet. But the thing is, when we talk about $1 trillion, that could be used for taking care of human needs rather than for nuclear proliferation so you can destroy the planet. Deborah, do seniors receive proper assistance, the proper assistance that's needed under Medicare, or is more needed? Deborah?
Well, people don't understand that, you know, they think that we're just milking the system when we're on Medicare. They don't understand that we pay out the gazoo for with premiums and copays and deductibles. What Alan mentions, the national public health care would benefit all of us, young and old. And there's no reason why we can't do that. But when they mentioned this Medicare for all, it's for profit. That's all it is so the insurance companies can profit.
Yeah, Medicare for all. Yeah.
If when we talk about how we're going to pay for this, if we just put the doctors on the public payroll, and if we nationalize the hospitals and the nursing homes, we could easily pay without any additional taxes or anything else.
Yeah, because why does some doctors need to make like $300,000 and $400,000 a year? You know,
well, it's a lot more than that. That some of these doctors are.
Oh, the neurosurgeons are making almost $1 million.
Yeah, and a lot of them are just cheating the system to boot. You have all kinds of doctors that have been brought into courts and everything. They've been cheating Medicare and Medicaid for years out of millions and millions of dollars. Fake charges for doing tests that they never even performed. They're charging people for.
I have two more minutes, and this is one that I always like to just to bring up. What are your thoughts about a basic income guarantee for all? For seniors, I believe it should be for everyone, but Matt, basic income guarantee, almost every socialist organization I know stand for a basic income guarantee. What are your thoughts, Matt? I have two more minutes, and then I'd like each one of you just to touch on that.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. It is very necessary. What we in our independence movement are hoping is that as we push forward here, and we win victories here, people in other parts of the U.S. will look at what we are accomplishing. They'll say, hey, why aren't we doing that here? Okay. So we're hoping to break the chain at its weakest link so that it will crumble. Okay. Where, you know, amongst the other links. Okay. So we're going to start here, and hopefully, you know, what we're doing will set such a powerful, positive example that folks in other parts of the U.S. will look at that and they'll say, hey, why aren't we doing?
And Alan, what is your thought on that?
I support a basic income guarantee as long as it's in line with the actual cost of living.
And I also think that it's going to be necessary because of that all of our jobs are being taken over by technology.
Well, I do hear the music, and I want to thank our listeners for joining us once again for Socialist Can, 1 hour left. Very important topic that we're dealing with today, dealing with the future of our seniors in this country. And we with Socialist Connection Action Network, this is one subject that we are not through dealing with. We will bring this to you time and time again. We are determined to make a change. We ask our listeners to join us next week, the same time, on Socialist Can, 1 hour left. Thanks again, everyone, for joining the program. We'll see you then. Have a good night.
Good night.
Night.